And the idea of people have the nerve to try to impose that on people. They've got no use for you. And that's why you resort to whining, because your mammy never gave you anything else with which to appeal to the world with. So when it is actually time for you to behave as a male and to get the respect and attention that you are supposed to get in a masculine way, you don't do that. So you're not using, you're using the, a tool that does not work, and you're refusing to use the only tool that you actually do have that would work. You're just refusing to do that. And then you wonder why so many black males are now desirous. I mean, not just out there, they're actually asking for a female to take care of them. I had a bunch of dudes, they've been arguing with me for days and weeks now. They want a woman to be the co-head of household, but they don't want the woman to challenge their authority. So let me get this straight. You're going to put expectations on a female to lead, but then tell her, but leave all the good stuff for me. So in other words, you want her to take care of the adult responsibilities while you get to have the fun ride. That's what you're looking for. You women should be ashamed of yourselves. The two generations of black males walking around out here right now are proof positive that you females have failed. You have failed as women. You have failed as mothers. You have failed as parents. And right now you're failing as human beings. You are failing as human beings. Because your sons are completely and totally, they're grown in their 30s and 40s and older, and completely devoid of masculine characteristics. They are completely devoid of the ability to approach the world in a masculine manner. They come out whining. They come out swinging with their crying and their yelling, trying to demand things from other people by whining, by making physical threats and making, well, not physical threats, but by making verbal threats. I'll do this. I'll do that. You better not. Why I gotta do this? Gimme, gimme, gimme. And then at the end of all that whining and wailing and crying and pitching and moaning, they ended off by saying, and respect me because I'm a man. That's what they ended off with. They ended off with that. After you have done everything that is absolutely contrary and counter to manhood whatsoever, now you want to end it up with talking about, and I'm a man. This is what happens when you're raised by hood rats. This is what happens when you are raised in the bastard baby maker culture. This is what they do to you. This is what they do to you. They send you out into the world to try to argue with people on feminine terms. That's what they do to you. They send you out into the world as a male to try to argue against the rest of the world on feminine terms. And as a male, you are simply incapable of doing that. You are as incapable of trying to bully your way on feminine terms as a female is trying to bully her way on masculine terms. What happens, you notice that females with their tight skirts and they act a fool at the club and they're fighting and stuff, do you see how they get treated? Take a look at them. Even like Evelyn Lozado. At least she's got her hair done and her makeup done. She is a shrieking, wailing, ultra-violent harpy. But all things considered, with all of that considered, at least she is a female. At least she's a female. Now, then you go grab some Wanda Sykes-looking chick, and she wants to get up in your face and square off on you, like Debo. She's going to get up in your face all hard and all tough. Do you extend to her any type of feminine deference? No, because you are a female with a scrotum. And so you are going to be accorded the respect that that deserves. You don't get feminine treatment. You gonna get some masculine treatment, right? Yeah. Because you have not stayed in your lane. This is a sad state of affairs where the women are butch and the men are whining and actually thinking that's going to get them something. Now, let me explain to you here how we deal with that in intelligent black society. Believe it or not, to the whiner, and there were a few of them, but we sent the link to them. We're not going to give you a refund. We sent the link. If you didn't check the link, that's your fault. But there's documentation from our side and brown paper tickets. We sent the link to you. So there you have it. You've gotten it. You enjoy watching 7 a.m. tonight. I hope you enjoy watching it. I hope you enjoy seeing it. I hope that you get everything out of it. I hope you like it. Because this will be the very last time that you ever, ever interact with intelligent black society again. Because after tonight, you will receive a lifetime ban. You will be banned for life. And don't anybody even try to appeal the process for them. You got a better chance of making me a fan of Eminem than you have of getting them back in the door. Don't buy a DVD. Don't come to a movie. A couple of you are in the group. You will be banned tonight because I'm going to make an example out of you. We're not going to get anywhere with you hanging off of us. You see, you misunderstood the purpose of 7 a.m., even though it was explained to you. You misunderstood the purpose. 7 a.m. is not about money. I'm not sitting up here raking in the cash and talking about living the high life. 7 a.m. is not about money. It is about showing the world that the builders of the pyramids are still building. We're getting ready to have a showing in Ghana. Now, you all know there is no way on this side of the Southwest hell that we are going to make any money in Ghana. You know that going in. No way we're going to do that. But this is our one opportunity to outreach to our brothers and our sisters home. And I'm taking it. We're looking into screening in South Africa now. And this will be our one chance. However it's got to be, we're going to get it. But as you know, there's no way we can make any money at it. There's no way. There is absolutely no way that we are going to make any money in South Africa. None. None. Not a chance. But that's not our purpose for doing it now, is it? We're not doing this because we're trying to make money. We're doing this because you underestimate us for what we're doing it for. We're doing it because we want to make a change, not make a dollar. Africa will receive special dispensation and consideration that places like St. Louis will not. Africa's got fewer outlets. St. Louis has no excuses. So the money that would have been spent in St. Louis, that will be spent in Ghana. That'll be spent over there. And we'll see how that goes. But I am not going to attempt to go head-to-head, toe-to-toe, blow-for-blow with white supremacists, with a bunch of whiners, whores, and cowards on our side. And I had somebody here the other day from the civil rights generation, you know, the failures, the coons of integration. I had some folk from the civil rights generation not happy about what I said. And how I say it. Not happy about my tone. Let me tell you something from the jigaboon generation. From the sitting at the lunch counter is empowerment generation. Let me tell you something. You people screwed up everything. We had a black economy before the civil rights generation. We had intact families before the Civil Rights Generation. Most of the businesses we went to were black before the Civil Rights Generation. They gave it all up. Most of our children were born in two-parent households before the Civil Rights Generation. They gave it all up. Most of us understood that drugs were bad for us before the Civil Rights Generation. The Civil Rights Generation created the interracialist culture. The Civil Rights Generation created the bastard baby epidemic culture. Civil Rights Generation created the whore culture. The Civil Rights Generation created the drug culture. The CIA just took advantage of what you already were because they could see how weak and how shallow and how hollow and how decadent you were. They could see it. They could see how phony and weak you were. And they just took advantage of the weakness that was already there. That was all they did. Nobody held you down, forced you to accept cocaine and heroin. You wanted it. And J. Edgar Hoover simply provided the product that you desired because he knew how weak you were. And just like Section 8, the Civil Rights Generation created the Section 8 welfare culture. That's what you did. And now these no good, worthless bastards want us to thank them and show gratitude to them for creating this cesspool? Hell no. And I will not let a bunch of ignorant fools who sat up here and destroyed the world and made a mess of everything around them try to come up to me and criticize the manner in which I clean up the mess that they made. You made this mess. I'm just the guy fixing it. That's all. And my only regret about the Civil Rights Generation is if you liked Bull Connor that much, and if you liked Eugene Decock that much, and if you liked all of these people who brutalized you that much, my only regret is that they didn't leave you with them. Since you love them so much, and you want to forgive your enemies so bad, my only regret is that they didn't leave you to the tender mercies of Lincoln Rockwell and his ilk. Since you love your enemies so much. The Civil Rights Generation is the only group of people on earth who love their enemies and hate their children. I ain't playing about it. The Civil Rights Generation is the only group of people on earth who preach loving their enemies and despising their own children. And you better just be glad that I didn't have the ability to make a documentary about you at the same time I was doing 7 a.m. But I made sure that the Civil Rights Generation got their just due in 7 a.m. All these whiny males out here today and slutty females, that's the legacy of the Civil Rights Generation. That is your legacy to history. That you made a toilet of the whole world around you. The Civil Rights Generation, when I was talking to Tariq Nasheed a couple of weeks ago here, I had said that while we were talking, we had made the observation the Civil Rights Generation had failed us. Let me make a slight correction to that tonight. The Civil Rights Generation did not fail us. The Civil Rights Generation betrayed us. The Civil Rights Generation betrayed us. And they didn't give a damn how the sons grew up. They didn't give a damn how the daughters grew up. Give me my weed, give me my sexual liberation, and give me my little job at the Ford plant, and I'm done. And tonight I've got whiny, moany, pitchy little hoe boys. The sons of the whorehouse are coming to intelligent black society, bringing the whorehouse rules that they learned with them. Completely and totally incapable of fighting white supremacy at any turn, at any angle. Totally incapable. Tell me, is Darren Wilson going to be sitting up here upset? Tell me how much of your whining is going to upset Darren Wilson. Tell me. Tell me how much of your whining is scaring Daniel Pantaleo. The Civil Rights Generation, let me run down the list for you all right now. The Civil Rights Generation created the bastard baby maker culture. The Civil Rights Generation created the bastard baby culture. The Civil Rights Generation created the drug culture. The Civil Rights Generation created the STD culture. That's right. The Civil Rights Generation created the herpes culture. The Civil Rights Generation created the three women can sleep with one male culture and it's okay. The Civil Rights Generation created the drug culture, the heroin culture, the crack cocaine culture. The Civil Rights Generation created that. That's their baby. The Civil Rights Generation created the interracialist culture, the integrationist culture, the sell your soul to sit next to white folks on the toilet culture. That's what the Civil Rights Generation created. The Civil Rights Generation created the marching and protesting and turn the other cheek and bow before your enemies culture. The Civil Rights Generation created the marching and protesting culture as a response to police brutality. The Civil Rights Generation created the line up, 50 people in a line up for Air Jordan's culture. That's the Civil Rights Generation. That was their idea of raising children. Who needed the way that Carter G. Woods and Marcus Garvey talked about it? Who needed that? They had a better way. The Civil Rights Generation had a better idea. Who needs civilized culture? Who needs progressive culture? Give them a weed. Give them a smoke. Give them a drugs. The Civil Rights Generation created the ghetto culture as black culture. The Civil Rights Generation changed the words ghetto and black to be synonymous. That's their culture, cultural accomplishment. The Civil Rights Generation created the culture vulture, invasion acceptance culture. Tina Marie and her ilk. The Civil Rights Generation created the term honorary black people. Never met a black person who was an honorary Caucasian, but the Civil Rights Generation will knock you over and beat you to death today to sit up here and be called an honor. If you sit up here and tell them that Bill Clinton's not an honorary black person, even though he created the three strikes law with his good buddy Newt Gingrich, and they made you all think they were against each other. And they were for each other the whole damn time. They were for each other and out to get you. But the Civil Rights Generation considers being spit on by white society to be an honor. They consider wiping the feces and the saliva off of their faces to be a privilege. And they've taught the rest of you to accept that as a privilege. And I'm saying it in the terms it needs to be said in. I'm saying it just like it is. They accept that kind of treatment, and they want you to accept it, too. And that's why they're on your asses so hard and heavy to start bowing and scraping. And when your Civil Rights Generation didn't give y'all a damn thing, they didn't leave you any businesses, they didn't leave you any neighborhoods that are worth a damn, they didn't leave you any property, they didn't leave you any assets, they didn't leave you any institutions, they left you nothing. They don't. And when you ask for it, they don't show up with anything. Call your parents tonight and ask them what they're passing down to you. And they got a lot of you repeating that same damn slave plantation crap talk. My parents passed down to me a good mind. If you're stupid enough to believe that emotional feeling worth more than money, then obviously you ain't got a good mind. So that's your proof that your parents didn't give you what they told you they gave you, obviously. Because you think kissing the ass of folk who left nothing to you somehow indicates you got a good mind. None so blind as them who will not see. The Civil Rights Generation created all of that. And now we're waiting and slogging our way through this mess. And my inbox is filled with the cast-offs of their malfeasance. And now here we are trying to create a society from scratch. Because we can't create a society from your penchant and your obsession with integration. The civil rights generation never bothered to ask, but wait a minute, what if I'm not okay with them spitting on me? The civil rights generation taught you, you notice they don't show up for anything else at any other time. They never show up for anything that you need. They never show up for anything. When you ask about what am I being passed down, crickets, you can't find them. When you ask them where your assets are, crickets, you can't find them. But when the police gun down young black people, all of a sudden here comes the civil rights coon generation. Enter stage left. Here comes the civil rights generation to tell you, now y'all need to be good now, march, protest, sing, sing a hymn, we shall overcome. You've been talking about overcoming for 80 damn years now. They're quick to, all of a sudden, you're surrounded by the civil rights relics. All of a sudden, you're surrounded by the civil rights fossils. When it's time to seek assets, you can't find with a magnoscope. You can't find them with a microscope or a magnifier. But when the police show up, all of a sudden here come throngs of the civil rights generation to come and tell you, don't do anything. Don't say anything. You don't need businesses. You need to go picket these white folks and tell them, let you in. Let me in. Let me in. I want in this store. I want in this club. I want in this fraternity. Black men are the best athletes in the world, and yet they are fighting to get into non-black owned situations. Why? Because the people you're trying to get with can do it better than you? Why are you not relying on yourself? And then they'll let a bunch of white folk get together and corral them together. So you've got most of your NFL teams, most of your NBA teams are black. Why couldn't you have done that for yourself? Because the white guys have absolutely no problem corralling you all together and putting out a product that is majority black. But when I tell you put out a product that's majority black, you tell me you can't do it. And that is because you are not actually trying to succeed. Because your parents told you that money didn't matter. Validation did. And so now when you get in the presence of white people, you stand to attention. You're disciplined. You're robots. You're zombies. You stand at attention for them. When you are in the presence of your people, however, all of a sudden, I ain't got to do nothing for you niggas. I ain't got to do nothing for y'all. They get their white girlfriends in the NBA and the NFL and will spend untold millions on them. Tiger Woods sat up here and lost every damn thing he had. Had no problem with it. O.J. Simpson ruined his damn life. They have no problem doing that. But when they get around black people, I'm Cablasian. I'm a Calabanasian. Dennis Rodman, I don't date black women like that. I don't like dark butts. All that discipline that they were able to show in front of their white masters, they get in front of blacks, and all of a sudden that discipline disappears. And they're telling you what they really think of you. And I am saying that in this generation, enough, enough, enough. No more excuses. No more accepting your excuses. There will be no more excuses. Either you are on board with us or you are against us, but it's just that simple. The whining stops here. The moaning stops here. The excuses stop here. The finger pointing stops here. The deflection stops here. The fear stops here. That was good enough for your mammies and your pappies and your slap-happy Sambos of the civil rights generation. That's not going to fly in the intelligent black society generation. Not gonna fly. Not gonna have it. Let me make something very clear to you. We got you on the ropes. The pendulum is swinging back our way. The wind is at our backs. The momentum is on our side. We didn't just put out the opening salvo against you. These are the first bombs dropping of a never-ending onslaught on you that is going to keep pushing until we have shoved you all off into the sea. future ain't big enough for the both of us. So guess what? We voted you off the island. Now, I know a lot of you don't like that. Oh, a lot of you are scared. A lot of you are worried right now. Isn't it amazing? They're not worried about white supremacy coming and gunning their ass down. They're worried about me. But you know what? You should be. You should be worried about intelligent black society. You should be scared. Because, you see, white daddy has been running interference for you. But the reason he was running interference for you, the reason he's been slipping the welfare checks and the Section 8 vouchers and the WIC vouchers and the public housing, the reason he did that was because he thought that was burying us. He thought it was stopping us. He thought it was preventing us. He thought that we were going to be drowning in a sea of Sambos and Coons. And as long as that was the price he had to pay for that, to keep us subdued, to keep us hemmed up, to keep us stalemated, to keep us blockaded in and buried in pools, well, that was a small price to pay, but you see, it's not working anymore. When you see a line of black people in Washington, D.C., and a line of black people in L.A., and a line of black people in New York, and a line of black people sold out in Chicago, sold out in D.C., full house in New York, full house in London, in Ontario, he realizes that his 60-year investment and black stupidity is no longer paying off. And since that's not paying off anymore, there is no reason to keep making that investment. It's time for him to start taking those resources and start marshaling them back to himself because it is no longer having the intended effect. I was reading an article just yesterday that said that the upper middle class is the real problem, not the rich. And what it was talking about was gentrification. And it was talking about how in Manhattan, the super rich, you know, that top 1% in Manhattan moved out the whites in that top 10%, because the top 10% couldn't be like the top 1%, so that top 10% could no longer afford to live in Manhattan, so they got gentrified out of Manhattan, and they all started moving down to Brooklyn, starting to move down to Harlem. And so once they move into the neighborhood, the prices are a lot lower for the housing, so they move into the neighborhood. And you know, and the way the story goes, and I may post it up later for you so you all can see it, but the way that he wrote the article, it was very interesting because it reminded me of the Christian missionaries. The pathology of it and the sequence of the events and the order of the events reminded me of the Christian missionaries in Africa. The procedure was all the same. That first they showed up saying, hey, we just want a little land. Just want a place to live. Next, the next thing that happens after all these people who couldn't afford to live in Manhattan but had more than enough money to live in Brooklyn, the next thing they did was they wanted their amenities. They wanted their businesses. They wanted to have a Whole Foods and a Chipotle and a yoga club and all those things that they had in Manhattan. They wanted it in Brooklyn now. They want it in Harlem now. All those higher-end stores, they wouldn't build them in black neighborhoods. And Negroes didn't ask for it because the civil rights generation did not want stores in their own neighborhoods. Let me tell the damn truth. The reason that you do not have those kinds of stores in black neighborhoods is because the civil rights generation did not want stores in their own neighborhoods. They wanted access to the stores in the white neighborhoods because if you built this, they thought so lowly of themselves that if you built a Whole Foods in their neighborhoods, it'd be worthless. And it's worthless because, well, you built it here, so obviously it ain't worth nothing. I don't want a supermarket in my neighborhood. I want to drive 25 minutes, take the subway an hour to go to the white side of town because that's where I want to be, because if I go there, then my money is valid. But you can't build it here, so we don't want it. We don't care about that. Now, these gentrifiers are moving into the neighborhood and want their organic food stores. They want their yoga clubs. They want their dance studios. They want their art galleries. That's right. They want their high-end fitness clubs. They want their high-end electronic stores. They want that. They want that. They want their hair salons. They want their Xerox stores. They want them right there in that neighborhood. And next thing you know, the guy makes the observation that the next thing you know, all of a sudden, those people who got gentrified out of Manhattan and they came into the black neighborhoods in Brooklyn and Harlem and started setting up for themselves, that pretty soon you start noticing that their behavior becomes exactly like the 1% in Manhattan that they didn't qualify to be. All of a sudden, they want to restrict the zoning. All of a sudden, they want to restrict it. All of a sudden, they want to put up barriers to businesses. All of a sudden, they don't want you. They don't want certain people coming into certain parts of town. All of a sudden, they want a higher police presence. All of a sudden, the housing prices start skyrocketing, and now they don't want anybody who can't afford the housing to be anywhere near them. So now they create a new pushing off effect. They got pushed out of Manhattan. They've come to Brooklyn. They're setting up shop. And now they're emulating the behavior, the exact same psychology that pushed them out of Manhattan. The exact same psychology that pushed them out of Manhattan. Now they come and they emulate it themselves. And tell me, how much of that did your parents prepare you for? How much of that did your parents prepare any of you for? I'm taking a look at New York right now. I'm taking a look at it, and they didn't prepare you for it. So understand, as they see us beginning to rise, and as they see us beginning to focus on power, wealth, and influence, they're like, oh, hell, they found the source. This generation is different. They're not going to coon and buck dance. Send in Daniel Pantaleo. As they see that their machinations are failing, they are now going to say, you know what? We don't need Bushika anymore. We don't need her anymore because she's not getting the job done. Her bastard sons are not drowning out intelligent black society. Intelligent black society is making progress even despite Bushika. They are changing black society's culture from the inside because, you see, the shills that we paid for do not speak the truth the way that intelligent society does. The shills that we paid for and the entertainers that we paid for, these guys are bringing in a new type of elitism in intelligent black society that counters and defuses the coons that we spent good money propping up. They are destroying coon culture within black society from the inside. That we have our agents in blackface, but these people have the truth and history and the icons on their side. They're the real damn deal. So we don't need Bushika anymore. We don't need Tangelika anymore. And you're going to start seeing a lot of your good white liberal friends start to sound like them now. Because once they see that you're not helpless anymore, once they see that you can meet them eye to eye on an even keel, once they see that you can meet them on an equal basis and that you have power that did not come from them, that what you have is something that you built and it did not come from them, that's when they're going to start wanting to sever ties and get real strict with you all of a sudden. Now they're going to want to get real strict with you. You see, 7 a.m. didn't depend upon anybody outside the black community, and now that's the kind of thing they're going to watch for, is to see how many times is that going to occur. You got projects like Hidden Colors. They want to see how many times is that going to occur. And let me tell you right now, the game is getting blown wide open. The game is getting blown wide open. Because last summer, you had Hidden Colors. And I was going to release 7 a.m. last summer. I was going to release it last summer, but because of the crowdfunding and because of the crowdfunding primarily, I decided to delay it a little bit. I was really going to delay it till the fall. Hidden Colors 3 came out, and I mean, that thing just had such a head of steam on it that I really just said to myself, you know, let it ride. Let it ride. You know, it's really out there, and I thought, and I still feel the exact same way, by the way. I have no regrets about it. I still feel the exact same way. Even though summertime is usually big for films, I felt like that needed to have all the space and all the stage to itself. Because in black society, too often we have this habit and this pathology of trying to, if somebody else is getting shine, let me jump out there right now while everybody's looking at him. Let me see if I can jump on the stage. Hey, 7 a.m., black and broke, wake up, 7 a.m. No. I said, no, this is powerful. This is impactful. And what it will do is it'll set up dominoes. What if he puts out Hidden Colors in the summer of 2014 and then 7 a.m. detonates in the winter of 2014? And now, you know, he's already talking putting out Hidden Colors. I think he said he's going to show a teaser trailer tonight. So, I mean, just think about that. Hit after hit, you keep bombing on them and keep dropping on them. Just when you thought it was safe to, just when white supremacy and the coons thought it was safe to come out and buck dance the Sambo, here comes Hidden Colors 3. And just when they thought that the storm was over, here comes 7 a.m. literally all day long. And just when they thought, oh man, it's getting rough out there, here we come with another one. That's the kind of thing that they're watching for. And then they start saying, okay, these niggas is getting their act together. We need to do something about this. We need to do something about this. Because Chandelaria is not getting the job done anymore. These people are putting stuff together on their own. And they're meeting us on an equal basis. The production value is there. The message is rock solid. The speakers are well-versed and thorough and articulate. We're losing ground. We're losing ground. The best and the brightest are rising to the top. The plot isn't working. Now they're going to say, you know what? Tell them welfare hose is over. The ride's going to go on just a little bit longer, but understand they're going to start derailing this thing now because your job, super sluts, coon heads, made-up name people, your job was to be an obstacle and to trip up the rest of us in intelligent black society. That was your job, to drown us out. Now that you are failing at it, understand, your master doesn't have any more use for you because you're failing. And it's my job to make sure you go to the bottom of the sea, and I'm going to make sure you get there. Express route. No matter how much whining you do, no matter how much crying and tearing up and moaning you do, no matter how much you beg and how much you squeal, it's not going to intimidate. It's not going to interrupt. It's not even going to slow us down now. And just understand something. Your boss knows that you're too weak to stop us. You can't stop us. Your job was to stop us and you failed at it. And you see, your boss understands that you are what's supposed to block us from getting at him. That you are supposed to stand in our way to divert and distract and detour and make us go off in a bad direction. You're supposed to mislead us. You're supposed to mislead everybody away from taking on the threat of white supremacy. That's what your job was to do. And you failed at it. I'm here to tell you tonight, you failed. You failed. And your master's greatest fear is that we would become powerful enough to deal with you, because he knows that as soon as we deal with you, there ain't nothing between us and him but air. There ain't nothing between us and him but the blue sky. As Arsenio Hall said, there ain't nothing between you and me but air and opportunity. So he knows the threat is real. Even if you don't get it, he knows the threat is real. He knows that the odds against him are real. He understands it, even if you don't. Because it's not for you to understand. It's for us to understand. Brothers and sisters, but primarily brothers, you have learned many defense mechanisms that you picked up on the plantations. You learned to bow, you learned to buck dance, you learned to scrape, you learned to keep your head low. And we broke that behavior. But the civil rights generation betrayed all of us and reintroduced plantation mentality back into black society. We had shuffled that off of us after Marcus Garvey, but the civil rights generation betrayed everyone, betrayed an entire people, and brought back, re-migrated back in those plantation pathologies. The fat mammy, the slut, the bedwench, the Jezebel, the buck, which is what your pro athletes are, the class clown, the Sambo coon dancing a jig, all of these things that are non-threatening to the superstructure, all of these characteristics that are non-threatening to white supremacy, that is what they did. And that's why you whine today, because they took it a step further. They didn't just do what Massa told them to do. They took it a step further and said, look here, Massa, not only can we separate the children and break up the home, we will turn the boys into girls and the girls into boys. And Massa said, ooh, let me see that trick. I didn't know you could do that. Let me see how that trick goes. Show me, Sambo. And most of your parents lined up to show him. And they were pleased because, as far as they're concerned, white supremacy is their friend. Black society is the enemy. You better be very careful about the enemies you've chosen. And for those of you who have adopted the behaviors that they created, for those of you who have adopted this pathology, that you are going to whine and moan, that you are going to be as non-threatening as possible, that you are going to make a mess in black society while you become model citizens among white society, for those of you who think you're going to destroy this thing from the inside out with all these bad behaviors that you picked up, being sluts and whiners, coons, thugs, thieves, idiots, morons, slackers, unproductive, unambitious, unintelligent, uninspired, unmotivated, unentrepreneurial. Understand something. You are the prime tools of white supremacy, and you get dealt with first. So step on up. The guillotine's ready. And this concludes tonight's broadcast of the BlackChannel.net radio. I am your host, your brother, your humble servant, the Black Authority. And until next time, brothers and sisters from around the world, remember, black is the future. Ain't accepting any excuses.